All right, it's episode 3F13, Lisa the Iconoclast, a word that probably hasn't been used in almost any TV title of any episode of any show ever. February 18th, 1996 was the original air date. I am Bill Oakley, executive producer and showrunner.
And Josh Weinstein, the other executive producer.
Hi, David Silverman here, supervising director.
Jonathan Collier, the writer.
Yardley Smith, the voice of Lisa Simpson.
Mike Anderson, director.
Mike, this was the first episode that you ever directed.
First ever episode.
It's an amazing episode.
This is one. I would say this is possibly my favorite episode. It's so, of all the ones we did, I'm so proud of it. And I watched it again, and it's a really awesome story. And it's so well executed and so well put together.
Even just that little detail, by the way, the people marching by, with the foreground people in the crowd, it works really well.
One of the guys looked at the camera, too. It's all cheese.
And by the way, the Post did a great job of scratching the film and making it look like an old movie.
Yes, and all the touches of the guys, the stunt man who doesn't have the matching sideburns, and then the boom mic coming into the frame.
We even put watches on people, but nobody noticed.
And this, of course, between here, the stunt, and the guy riding it.
Oh, look at the hand there.
The hand holding it.
And these guys, the guys who push him in and then try to look casual.
This is back when films were bad, not like today.
They're all awesome now.
Well, we had to watch stuff like this in school. Not quite so much. Now, Embiggens and Cromulent, have taken on a life of their own. I don't know if you know this, John, but on the internet, not just Simpsons fans. I think that actually Embiggens has become a real word. Thanks to this episode. And I've Cromulent. I know you can actually buy T-shirts that have Cromulent on them as whatever, because people have taken this thing to heart,
I could get enormous royalties from them.
Sorry, they are the Fox.
Take enormous royalties from Webster's Dictionary, I'm sure.
No, I heard Embiggens was actually used at a college commencement a few years ago to huge applause by the president of the university.
Really?
Yes, he made a speech and he used Embiggens. And he got a standing ovation for it, evidently.
And Cromulent, people sometimes ask me if those were real words, and what was the origin of that craziness?
You gave me the instructions when I was writing the script and said, come up with a word that no one else would use but sounds like a real word.
Right.
I came up with something very close to Embiggens. I forget what it was. And it might have been Dan Graney who came up with Embiggens.
Dan Graney sitting here in the background doesn't have a mic, but he said it's true. So there it is. David Cohen came up with Cromulent.
It sounds like David Cohen.
It actually sounds like David Cohen, yes. That's, anyway, the secret origin of that. Now, this episode came from, I believe the way it was conceived of was, this was when that Zachary Taylor business was going on. Does anyone remember that?
No.
I do.
Zachary Taylor's with us.
Zachary Taylor was president in around 1850. Right.
And they wanted to...
He died mysterious circumstances. People said he had a heart attack from eating refrigerated cherries on a very hot day or something. A woman, in around the time that we were writing this episode, had a theory, an unpublished manuscript, claiming that he'd been assassinated, right? Or he'd by
had he been poisoned.
People like Henry Clay or someone, what was it?
I think it was Henry Clay, and it was arsenic poisoning, right?
Arsenic poisoning, yeah. Correct. And they wanted to exhume the body of Zachary Taylor, which was just like, you can't go exhuming presidents just because some old lady has an unpublished manuscript.
Why not?
But that's what happened, right? And this whole episode was just that story retold, right? But Lisa was the old lady.
Pretty much.
Sure, sure. As usual. Sure.
Exactly.
But this is really good, too, because it's another thing. We didn't get to delve so much into Springfield history, and this is a great opportunity.
That's one of the things I love about this episode in particular, is that there's so many things on The Simpsons and so many things in regular comedy where people don't take anything seriously, and they don't care about whatever. They don't have any hopes or dreams or loyalty to anything. And one of the things that apparently binds Springfield together is that everyone, from Nelson to Homer to Flanders, loves Jebediah Springfield. He's an inspirational figure, and people just cannot tolerate the idea he's not all he was cracked up to be.
It's one of these things like Whacking Days. It's something the whole town is really proud of.
Yes.
No matter, unshaking faith and trust.
Now, how did you come up with Jebediah Springfield? What was the inspiration for that figure?
Well, Jebediah was long before our time.
It was the first season,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Anybody know the origin of...
Springfield needed a founder, so Jebediah Springfield... And that was the stolen statue episode. So that's where it first started.
Right, that's right.
So we had to get somebody who was like an icon. And
sure.
Then Bart, so this is actually interesting. So Bart first
degenerates the statue, and in this one, Lisa tries to take down the whole name of Springfield.
Now, do you guys want to say those paintings in the background that somebody worked on for hours and nobody ever noticed. Okay, it's Otto driving a cart of children to school. It's Marge in a silhouette, like a French Revolution-style silhouette, and it's Professor Frink flying, doing a Benjamin Franklin and flying the kite with electricity. And you guys designed those, we made them up, and people never knew that they were there.
And now they do. So thank you for listening to this commentary.
Now, do you want to talk about Donald Sutherland a little bit, who's one of our favorite people?
I would say Donald Sutherland is possibly, him and John Waters tie as my favorite guest stars that we ever had.
And it's also not just because they're really cool, it's their voices and their acting.
Their performances really bring something to the role.
They really fit into the world of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
It was a very seamless addition.
I don't remember how we came up with the, I don't remember why it was Donald Sutherland, but I think.
I actually wrote it for him.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. I wrote it with him in mind.
And we got him.
Yeah.
It was a real exciting. And tell us, Yardley, do you remember what it was like when we were there with him?
I actually did a movie with him in 86. And I do remember going up to him and saying, "Hi, I'm Yardley Smith. We worked together, you know, on Heaven Help Us." And he just sort of blanched and thought, oh, a chapter of his life perhaps he wanted to forget. And I was like, but see, that was my first movie. So it was a big deal for me. And he's such an icon. And He's tall, and I'm not very tall, and so the presence of him was pretty overwhelming. And he's kind of serious. He's kind of a serious guy.
I remember he wanted to do it like we did a movie, and he wanted to start in the middle of the script.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
No.
He wanted to start in the middle of the script and then, like, kind of get the character so he'd be really into the character when we got back to the beginning. But for some reason, he abandoned that in the middle, and we're like, I was too timid to direct him very much, so most of this is him and Kirk Douglas and Lawrence Tierney.
Well, don't forget about this ad-lib here.
That was an ad-lib. I stepped on it.
That's all right. No,
you can rewind. they're the guys that we were too, us nerds were too timid to direct, so he just sort of did what he wanted, and it came out great. That thing about the Chester arthritis was made up. Just him going, hey, you had arthritis, and you,
and
Yardley.
I said, no.
And it's so, because it was so real. That moment was real, captured on tape.
A lot of the ad-libs are people's favorite stuff.
I remember being struck by how, more than almost anyone, when you speak to him, he is like his film persona.
Yes.
Yes.
He really
yes.
registers everything you're saying. You know there's something deep and internal going on, and you have no idea what it is and how he's going to react to it.
It's strange animating for him. I was such a fan of his, and to, you know, do his performances in animation, I felt the geek part of working with him, but he wasn't in the room.
Plus, there's a lot of great acting on his mustache.
Yeah.
Like when he lifts, one particular thing is, I'll point it out when we get there.
Love that
I
shot.
I love that shot, too. And the design is great of the tongue. I thought there was really nice graphic design of the tongue.
Now, who comes up with that? Is that in the script, that description of the tongue, or did you guys, as the animators?
That was in the script, the silver tongue.
There's a lot of specific designs to get that just right, I think.
I remember pages of tongue designs and the prosthetic tongue and the way it attaches and everything.
Yeah.
They've got a picture of the tongue coming up that I've got the original hanging on my wall at home.
Yeah, I love that engraving. Having to do an old-time engraving in Simpsons style must be such a dream.
Oh, it's fun. We really enjoy it. Don't we, Mike? By the way, the scene where he's writing and laughing, I remember you working on that very intently, the scene of when we see the pirate, Jebediah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a big
A lot of effort went into all this. I felt a great responsibility carrying the mantle of this mythology.
Well, also, that was our one fudge in this episode. Well, there's two fudges. There's two major fudges, which hopefully people never noticed. One is that Gilbert Stuart painting, it was unfinished. You know, the painting of Washington is just unfinished. It didn't get ripped off. There's never any evidence of that, but to the casual observer, whatever. And also that he put the tongue in the display case at the end. What a crazy idea that was, but it still worked.
Well, when Lisa holds up the piece of the missing painting, you guys in your notes said, don't hold it up so much, people will recognize it.
I know, it never existed, but
we thought that
cool.
At the time people knew history and that sort of thing.
We had some reasoning for the display case that he was an antiquarian, so he couldn't bear the thought of destroying anything.
Or not displaying it, apparently.
But you have proof.
Now, this also, I love the home. I really like episodes like this one in the football betting episode where Homer and Lisa bond. And it's like, I find it to be some of the most moving stuff that appears on the show. And particularly here when Homer is so supportive of her, everyone else is like down on her, but it's really sweet.
He often is. As much as he misunderstands her, I always feel like he comes through for her in the end. Even if at the very, very end he admits, I don't actually know what I just did for you, or he sort of drops the ball, I think she has eternal hope that he'll get her, and he has eternal hope that he'll get her. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Well, actually, script coming up, they sort of make mention of that, which I thought was very sweet. It's a great relationship in the show.
It's very successful. Unfortunately, historical
research is plagued. I love that line. I rewound it 3 times when I watched this again. I have nothing but respect for the office of town crier, but this is well outside your jurisdiction. That really sounds. I'm pretty sure that was yours, John. It sounds so like you.
That's how I feel.
Let's attribute it to you. Until
then. That's preposterous. Now get out. You're banned from this historical society. You and your children and your children's children.
This is a great line.
For 3 months.
His performance is also, he just nailed, like, with me just sitting there in the booth like a broomstick, while he performed, he did everything the way that you'd want it to be done. So we lucked out, whereas other actors didn't do that and had to be more directed, I guess.
Well, it's funny. They get intimidated, I think. They come in the room and they hear the voices that they've heard for so many years, and they suddenly think, oh, my God, I can't do that. And they don't understand that we've already brought them to the party because of whatever it is that they do.
Hmm.
But there's great comfort in working with icons like Donald Sutherland, feeling like since it's our party, I feel like, okay, well, then I know what I'm supposed to do here, so I don't have to feel like such a boob. So that always helps a little.
I love the way you directed Comic Book Guy in this scene. The way I love his acting earlier. He's just so aware of Homer.
Well, he had a little butt crack showing, and at the meeting, Matt got concerned that was the second butt crack in the episode, and he said, how many cracks are we going to have in this show? And I thought for sure it was my last show.
That wanted for treason thing is like the Kennedy thing from that really Lee Harvey Oswald was
passing
right. out, right?
Right, right.
See, now, who knows that?
Okay. Yeah,
smarty
all
pants like you.
Oh, that's what it was designed. It wanted for treason, exactly what it said, right? And
It did add pictures of Kennedy.
The summer before he assassinated that's Kennedy, right. He was passing out those things in New Orleans that looked like that.
We encourage any nerd who's listening to look into history. There's a lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah, oh my God. And these shows, particularly the John Collier episodes, are just rife with history.
Here comes the producer's reference with their mouths hanging open.
Oh, that's so good. Which I believe, if you haven't seen the producers, the original Mel Brooks one, it's the funniest single shot in the history of movies. After the first number in Springtime for Hitler, they cut to an audience filled with hundreds of hundreds of hundreds of people in tuxedos, all with their mouths just agape.
It is one of my favorite images in all movies. It's just a great
And that movie. Particular shot is an ode to that scene in the
yes.
producers.
I remember there being a lot of debate about whether to cuff Lisa or not here, because they cuffed Homer.
Oh. They cuffed Homer?
Yeah, his hand cuffed walking in.
Well, that's what happens when you tell the truth. You get cuffed.
We have major corporations sponsoring this event.
Oh, now he's not cuffed.
You're sponsoring a celebration for a murderous pirate.
A pirate? Well, that's hardly the image we want for Long John Silver's.
And the exit is great. It's so fast and immediate. You pull out. It's great. Great timing. There
is one way. Another thing, the acting, by the way, I want to talk to you about and praise you for, is that is Homer's acting when he's doing the town crier. It's so lusty. The way he rings that bell, he's really, you know who's ringing that bell? I'm pretty sure it's
like right
me.
Now, yes.
I'm pretty sure someone brought in a bell, and I was like, ring it like you mean it. You know, a lusty ring.
Mike was walking around the studio for a long time ringing a bell.
But like the way his arm is moving and the way he's so focused on his job, it's like he really deserves that
job. People don't remember the excitement of a town crier walking down the street, you'd be like, my God, something's happening.
When we were growing up, the town crier was a very important part.
Adlai Stevenson, you wanted...
Much like Norman Vincent Peale was another famous guy who did a lot of good that now, just Lisa, got crapped on for no reason in this season.
Stop trying to ruin Jebediah's reputation.
Yes.
What do we win if the tongue is there? Credibility.
Oh, what a jip.
Now, the original line was credibility, and screw that.
But we were not allowed to say screw at the time.
No, I don't know if we can now, but back then it was a taboo to say screw. Great shot. I love the way you've done the shadows on this, too.
Yeah, this is a classy episode.
Okay,
this is the one thing that his ventriloquist routine that sort of takes us a little bit out of the reality, but it was so funny. I'm pretty sure it was Tompkins. I can hear Tompkins doing it in my head. It's like, hello there, Bonesy. It's like the routine.
Here goes. Forgive us, Jebediah. We mean no disrespect.
But yeah, I mean, this is what they wanted to do to Zachary Taylor.
Wow. Can we still? Maybe we should do it. But, you know, I want to revive that.
Like his ventriloquism mouth.
Well, that's the spirit, Bonesy. Why don't you sing the song for the nice people? All right.
I love Quimby's face.
That's all great. Quimby coming in like that, so happy. Yeah. It's nice to get groundskeeper Willie to do this, by the way.
We were talking about Homer's passion for that bell.
Yeah,
watch here when they start to, it's threatened how he clutches it to his chest.
Yeah. Business was all your fault.
By the power vested in me, I hereby strip you of your ceremonial bell.
No.
He's ringing.
And tri-corner hat. You will have the hat cleaned. And
I love it. The things about this, the underpinnings of this episode. The fact that everyone loves Jebediah Springfield with unquestioning devotion, and that Homer just obviously born to have this job and loves it. It's like, and his relationship with Lisa, it's like, that's what gives it its oomph.
Yeah. It's like you're really intrigued. Like, okay, how's this going to resolve? It's so much at stake for both Lisa and for Homer.
She's tortured by trying to serve the greater good.
Why did you dig up the bones of the past? Why did you disturb the ghosts of history?
Washington barefoot there, just to make it more
it's
karate movie.
Ninja.
He's from Lethal Weapon, I think, that move.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Lisa, don't stop now. It looks really great. Also, the color is great. The Simpson yellow shows up very well against blues, and I always like to encourage people to color that way because they really pop out against the blue.
And why isn't Washington wearing any shoes?
He's a ninja.
Because of Lethal Weapon.
Ninja.
Or karate.
Really?
I think Mel Gibson's barefoot in that scene.
Really?
I think so.
And Washington's barefoot throughout much of his administration.
Isn't that so?
His second term, at least.
That's why he's usually pictured above the ankle in any portrait.
In your dreams, Claire.
And a good line from Ralph.
Can you open my milk, Mommy?
I remember that was a Bill Oakley observation.
Well,
there's always
didn't
one
that
kid
happen
in class.
To you guys in kindergarten? Wouldn't kids occasionally call the teacher Mommy? It certainly happened in my kindergarten. Maybe there was a lot of early infantile children there, but occasionally someone would slip and forget and call the teacher Mommy, and it would be the horrible derision to follow.
Well, I do want to point out that all the kids are in school today on the biggest day, the celebration of Jebediah Springfield.
Well, then they all get to go down there for the celebration later.
You? What are you doing here?
I was right about Jebediah, and now I can prove it.
Oh, please, not that claptrap again. Haven't you hurt Jebediah enough with your childish tales of pirate ships and fisticuffs?
You had to be sure not to show the parade going on outside.
Yep.
That's how come?
That's a lie.
Too much?
You're saving it for the right moment.
Sure.
Damn it. It's my job to seek out the truth.
When you
there are a lot of great angles throughout this show that you should take a look at. And just in terms of like having people in the foreground, very large and just a great every scene, who's commanding the space and who's in charge of it.
Right. Well, the best episodes are they're shot like a movie.
Very much like a movie. It's really impressive.
Yeah.
The overhead shots and stuff, all that stuff that you don't usually see in animation.
Here, that was a... It was a nice touch, a little glint there. Another great design.
I don't know why he did that, but it's a dramatic license, I guess.
Yeah.
Here's the mustache acting. It's coming up. Watch, well, everybody.
There's a bunch of cockroaches running around. I spent a whole Saturday doing it.
Look.
There we go.
Before the dust could settle, I pocketed it. But I thought I had you fooled.
You did, until I realized that Jebediah's confession was saying more than he meant it to.
There we go.
Here we go, everybody.
We didn't want to tip it because everybody knows that.
Earlier we had to hide his shoe because that was stuck to it.
And the direction here was like a piece of toilet paper.
That's what it was,
And I do want to say that being my first show directing, I set out to make the biggest parade of any Simpsons show, and I think it's pretty big.
It's a great job.
Look at all those people, and they're all waving their flags
and notoriously
stuff.
Hard.
Remember, we were inspired. I talked to Mike a lot about this, and we were thinking
That's
of
great.
Hail the Conquering Hero, the ending of that.
Yeah.
Yes, some of the shots. Didn't we watch that film, Mike, a few times?
I probably did because I own it, and I'm a huge Preston Sturges
Likewise,
fan.
Yeah.
There's Wes Archer and Nancy Cruz, other directors down on the right there.
They like parades. These shots, of course, are always very difficult, just drawing all these characters.
This thing with the sniper going, I think I can pick her off. Hank, that man, that makes me laugh every time. That's that real casual sniper voice.
There was a lot of debate over that, too, remember?
Yeah, you know what? Well, I actually think that we made the wrong choice. At the end, not the first sniper joke, this one.
I think I can pick her off.
Wait.
God, that's so well delivered. And there was a lot of debate about whether he was going to take a shot or not at the very end. And I think that in our desperation to have it be kind of put a joke in there, we had him take the shot, and I think it was the wrong move.
I disagree.
Well, there you go.
I actually, no other show in the history of TV would do the shot.
He gets a laugh.
Well, but still, I think it sort of craps on our Frank Capra moment there, you know? That's the whole, this was like, didn't you, I don't remember which Frank Capra movies, but it was all, this whole thing was supposed to be like a heartwarming, inspirational thing. And I think it's good, you know, the fact that she didn't have the heart to do it, I think is a really great twist there, you know?
Yeah, it is a good twist. It's the sort of thing that plays on the expectation of these shows, you know? So. The crowd in the back's a little
Chinese dragon.
Well, also, nobody except... that's a real complicated moral decision, because obviously...
that is funny. It is
Let
funny.
Let Capra be Capra.
I refuse to laugh at that. I refuse.
Well, I think it helps, because you get your Capra moment, and then you remind it, oh, it is a Simpsons.
I think
now, that's a reference to Animal House.
Right, yeah. Which I didn't realize when we were doing it.
When Stork knocks the guy off the roof.
Well, I'd like to, ma'am, but he's too damn good.
He is good. It's great to see Homer be really good at something.
Yeah.
And people appreciate him for it.
That lusty bell ringing that I did.
Wow, I feel really patriotic right now.
It's nice.
It's so moving.
It is. Well, you know, the fact that she's letting everyone have their fun is good.
I think it's fairly Lisa, you know. She really does care about the greater good.
Sometimes a great truth hurts, right?
This song, I did a guest DJ thing in New Mexico for a Simpsons show, and I played this as a finale, and I talked to the DJ later, and he said he put it in rotation for a few days because people called up for the song.
Jeff Martin came back, right?
Didn't he write the words and the music and everything? Yeah. He just sort of delivered it to us?
Yeah, that's what he did, but you know, back in the when he was here, he would write words and music to the songs like for the...
After Ken took over, but this was, I think, the last one that Jeff did for us.
He came back as a favor just to... But
it's his kind of thing.
Yeah.
Very cromulent.
Yes.
I'm very embiggened.